Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Chris, if you're going to type, please do it on mute.
Sorry.
Okay.
It is 10:14 a.m. and we have just heard the first Newcastle United fans arriving into the Stadium of Light. George and I are stood here in the bowl inside the Stadium of Light. How are you feeling ahead of this one, George? How are the nerves?
I've got that proper Derby Day nauseous feeling. Nauseous. I don't know why I said it like that. But I do. I mean, that's right and proper, so you should. Because you just have that sense of meaning and magnitude and you kind of know what's at stake. It proves we're alive. I love these occasions. I think they're very special. They're usually terrible games of football. But it's building up nicely inside the stadium. It's going to be crazy. The press box is full to overflowing. 100 journalists are here. Can't all fit into the press room. And yeah, it's just exciting.
Huge, huge afternoon ahead for North East football. And hopefully Newcastle United get the victory. Then we'll be back with team news once that's out.
We are now high up in the main stand at the Stadium of Light. It's about 55 minutes to kick off. The teams are out. Give us a little run through, Chris.
There are two Geordies in Newcastle United's starting 11. Dan Byrne and Sean Longstaff are in there. The two changes to the defeat at Liverpool with Kieran Trippier coming back in following injury. And also Almiron on his restore at the side. Lewis Miley drops to the bench along with Tuna Livramento too. So a very strong Newcastle side.
And Dan Byrne, who was cupping his ear, photographed cupping his ear as he arrived at the stadium a little earlier, which was quite funny. And Newcastle fans apparently singing "Roll out the red carpet, the Mags are in town, and you're only full for Beyonce" as they arrive at the stadium. It's quite an operation outside. Incredible police presence. I'm told up to 600 police people are here. I hope everyone's got here safely. But yeah, stadium's filling up nicely. And here we go. And it's lovely that they're playing the Human League in the background at the minute, Chris, and a song which begins, "You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you," which is something I sing to you on a regular basis. It's kickoff.
Left-hand side, and Patterson's just about stopped it. And it was Sean Longstaff who'd stolen into the box.
Certainly a chance.
Joe Linton.
Get caught again, Neil Goom.
Yeah, he's waiting for pace. Joe Linton into the area. Isak is arriving. It's an own goal. Dan Ballard has steered it beyond his goalkeeper to give Newcastle the lead in the derby.
Half-time at the Stadium of Light, and Newcastle United lead 1-0 thanks to a Dan Bollard own goal. It's been mainly one-way traffic. George seems to have been fairly comfortable for Newcastle in many ways.
Yeah, I thought there were some uncomfortable moments in that first half until they got the goal, but I think the score is reflecting Newcastle's dominance. I'd just like to talk briefly about the atmosphere right at the start. You may have heard a bit of it there, but just absolutely incredible. 15 minutes before kickoff, there's no music being played. It's just the two sets of supporters singing at each other. In fact, I think it's the irony has been a bit that it's felt a bit of a quieter way in, because I think there's been a nervousness in that Newcastle away end until that goal went in. But it was just sensational before the game. You've just got that constant knot in the stomach. It's, as I say, I think the scoreline is reflective of the match, but it's definitely not over as things stand.
I think a second goal will basically kill the game, but I imagine Sunderland will try and come and start quickly in the second half. They've only had one shot, which was from distance, and so, yeah, Newcastle need to be wary of that, but I think they've put themselves in a strong position.
Jolinton, brilliant.
It's Alexander Isak. It's the worst possible start to the second half for Sunderland. A Sunderland blunder hands Newcastle a two-goal cushion.
Defensively, it's an absolute disaster. Almiron has not given any of the Sunderland players a second on the ball. Absolute madness, particularly against that man. And it's excellent play. It really is from Almiron.
Gordon is away and Ballard's going to try and scurry back. Almiron to the far post. Ballard's brought him down. It's a penalty. Steps up. No mistake from Alexander Isak. And Newcastle, who were desperate for a ray of sunshine after a gloomy festive period, have found one at the Stadium of Light into round four. And they are about to win this derby for the first time since 2011.
Well, it's a couple of hours after the final whistle. We are walking away from the Stadium of Light. It's dark. It's pissing with rain. Newcastle United have won 3-0, which I think is probably their ideal result, really, isn't it, Chris?
I think it was basically, they did what they had to do. I don't think they were brilliant by any way, shape or form, but they were just better than Sunderland, as they should have been. Capitalised on mistakes and got the win, and by the end started to take the piss a little bit and just really, really try to wallow in the victory that they have here, because this was a big win for them in the context of the season and in the context of the rivalry.
Yeah, exactly. In the context of the last decade, it's been a miserable spell to be a Newcastle fan in these fixtures. So there we go. These days are draining, they're noisy, they're full of all that sort of venom and spite, and but the noise beforehand was magnificent, and in a way that we've not seen for a generation, really. Newcastle controlled the game and it was largely comfortable.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's dedicated Newcastle United podcast. And for the first time in what feels like forever, it's a happy Monday to George Corkin and Chris Woff. Chris, how the devil are you? You all right?
I'm not too bad, thank you. Yes, I'm not too bad. Just to give everyone an insight into how glamorous it is to cover Sunderland against Newcastle United, George picked me up from my house at 8:15 on Saturday morning. We then drove down to Sunderland, tried to park up somewhere. Eventually did, and then we went and sat in the Tesco opposite the Stadium of Light and went into the cafe, the big Tesco, and had a coffee and a little breakfast muffin there. That's what we're all about. Full glamour of Derby Day.
That is amazing. Just pulling back the curtain there, aren't you, Chris? Wonderful stuff. How are you, Georgie? All right.
I mean, from a Newcastle perspective, if Carlsberg did weekends, I think that's pretty much up there. I went to both matches. Went to the derby on Saturday, and it was just, I don't care what you say, Taylor. It was just that brilliant reminder of what that derby means, but what the match means. I mean, yes, there's a lot of nonsense around it, but my goodness, the occasion, the 15 minutes before kickoff when there's no music at the stadium, just both sets of fans singing at each other. It was just absolutely magnificent. And then went to the women's game yesterday at Kingston Park, saw them absolutely thrash Halifax. My God, they look like a really good team now. So, yeah, from a Newcastle perspective, what a brilliant weekend that was.
It was. I watched the game at home with my little boy, and all week leading up to it, he's been so confident. We're going to batter these, Dad. We're going to batter these. It's going to be the easiest derby ever. We're going to batter them. We're going to batter. It's going to be 5-0, 6-0. And I was like, listen, son, just settle down, right? It's not how it works. We sat on the sofa 5 minutes before kickoff, and he turned to me and he went, I think we're going to lose. And I went, now you're getting it.
That's
now
more like it.
So that's more like it. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, a great result and a great day. And like you say, George, a fantastic weekend for Newcastle. Let's start with the men in that case. A bright start, wasn't it, Chris, from Newcastle? The game was a bit of a quick, slow dance. Sunderland happy to let us have the ball. Two or three good chances, but nothing really cast iron. But what about that atmosphere before it started, though? Incredible.
The atmosphere was incredible from both sets of supporters. I mean, George was giving me all this spiel that he's given there before about 10 minutes into the game. He's like, oh, see, I told, it is. This is what you've got. This is what you want to be here for. So it's what it's all about. And I turned to him, and you've said bright start from Newcastle. Newcastle dominated the ball and dominated territory, but actually, and I think in terms of the game plan for the entire match, that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to tire Sunderland out, but actually the quality of the first 20, 30 minutes I didn't think was brilliant. I thought the pace of the game was pretty slow. I think Newcastle just had far too much of them and knew they had far too much of them, but also Newcastle's decision making, I think, in key moments. There was a little bit. Newcastle were a little bit tentative on the ball very early on, and their decision making let them down a few times. And that you could see they wanted to go down the wings when they could, but they would pass it about, and then it would tend to go back to Botman and usually share, and then they'd play a sort of ball over the top percentage ball, and Sunderland would get it back. So I thought the game took a little bit of time to get going, but I think that's exactly what Newcastle wanted to do in some ways, which was just Sunderland did try and come at them in terms of some tackles early on, try and get a bit of energy, use the energy of the crowd, and Newcastle just managed it really well. There were a couple of relatively decent chances for Sean Longstaff, one decent save from a header, another one which he put over the bar. And yeah, I think that really that first 10, 15, 20 minutes was about Newcastle making sure they had the ball, just take or suck everything, all the energy out of Sunderland, and just make sure that they were here to show that we are the superior side and we are going to manage this game well and eventually find the opener.
It was important, George, wasn't it, to try and take the sting out of the game earlier on and dampen that crowd a little bit, wasn't it? Because that Sunderland crowd were well up for it at the start of the game.
Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, it was brilliant. And I did, you know, I totally agree with Chris. I mean, Newcastle were very dominant in terms of possession. Sunderland sat back. Whether that was the right decision or not, in retrospect, I'm not sure. But there was that sense of nervousness around, I think, the Newcastle side a bit, and maybe amongst the crowd as well, that you just know that while the score's 0-0, anything can sort of happen. But I think the really impressive thing was that they did control the game, and I think the longer it went on, the more they grew into it. And of course, by the time the goal comes along, that was that, you know, that was really that sort of moment that quieted everything down and the nervousness just kind of drained from them. And by the end, it was, you know, it was a mismatch, wasn't it?
It was. And that goal came from an own goal from Dan Ballard, Chris, not Dan Ballard, as you called him in the little audio package at the top there. What were
Did
you playing
I?
At?
Oh, well, apologies. You know,
you called him Dan Bollard twice.
I was very much caught up in the. My head had gone. My head had completely gone on Derby Day. Yeah, head's completely gone.
Head's gone. We kept saying that to each other repeatedly when you're trying to sort of, you know, chat or sort of jot down coherent thoughts in that atmosphere. It's very difficult. So we were saying that to each other quite a lot. Head's gone.
We'd actually said that to George earlier on as well, because what I failed to mention is when the glamorous of getting to Sunderland early is George also then walked out in front of about three cars and nearly got himself run over as well.
Yeah, but we were travelling with Luke Edwards, so I think my instincts there were probably understandable. I think most Newcastle fans listening to this would agree that my instincts to just walk in front of a car was probably fair enough.
Sounds like you could have done with a few Dan Ballards there to protect you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're talking about, you know, talking about that that own goal, but what a cross that was in from Gillenthin.
He was magnificent, wasn't he, first half? He was all over the place.
We'll talk about them a bit more, but that cross was, you know, you couldn't defend against that cross. I mean, I felt sorry for Ballard, whatever his name is. And, you know, Isak was there at the far post waiting for it, and he had to do something. And unfortunately for him, it's kind of come off. But it was that cross.
It was a good striker's finish, wasn't it, Chris?
Brilliant.
It was a really good finish. It's one of those ones where if he doesn't actually get a foot on it, then Alexander Isak's going to put it in the back post. So it isn't a calamitous one in the sense that what exactly is he doing? He has to try and get a foot on the ball because Joe Linton's managed to get him behind. And what I found interesting about this, George certainly didn't and probably still doesn't now, is that early on Newcastle went down the right a lot. It was all get the ball to Trippier, and he had a lot of crosses in the first half, and a couple of the Longstaff chances came from that, and Newcastle were targeting that side, but then all of a sudden they sort of switched and they started targeting Huner on the other side, and it was Gordon was getting in behind to begin with. One of the Longstaff opportunities earlier on had come from that, and then Joe Linton gets in there, and it was very clear that Newcastle had switched focus from one flank to the other, and that's where they thought the opportunities could come from. And yeah, it's a really good ball from Bruno Guimaraes. Joe Linton gets in behind, lovely cross in the box. As I say, Isak's going to put it in if Ballard doesn't get there ahead of him. So I just think for Newcastle, that was the moment that they needed to really turn that dominance into taking the lead, because there'd been the three Longstaff opportunities, but beyond that, for all their possession, all their territory, they hadn't really created that much, that many clear-cut chances. And suddenly, I think, if they got to half-time and managed to sort of grind out that to 0-0 at that point, I think they would have grown in confidence, and the crowd certainly would have done. But to get the goal at that point just, again, sucked a little bit of the energy out of them once more.
It was 1-0 at half-time, George. Newcastle were looking dominant, and that young Sunderland side, probably more green than red and white, weren't they, let's be honest?
I think that is an interesting point. I think one of the things that sort of struck both Chris and I just watching that was how big Newcastle were. I mean, not just how much better they were, which they were, and they should have been. You know, you're talking about a Champions League team this season against a young Championship side, but there was just an absolute gulf in terms of physicality. And Sunderland, you know, there'd been a lot of talk about Joe Bellingham, there'd been a lot of talk about their other sort of young players and how good they could be, and, you know, can they play in the Premier League? And I just think it was a mismatch in that. I'm not saying that to be controversial or sort of critical of them. Very interesting that they're playing out from the back, like most teams seem to do these days, like most Championship teams seem to do. But I thought that sort of one of the interesting things in the derby, you know, you've often talked in the past, like the Catamol game at St. James's Park, where he goes clattering into somebody after 30 seconds. There was none of that really until sort of later on in the match from Sunderland. It was a physical mismatch as well as a talent mismatch, if you like. And obviously that second goal just completely and utterly kills the game from their perspective.
It certainly does, and the home side were continuing to try and play out from the back, weren't they, Chris? And they didn't have an awful lot of success. A bit of a mistake, and Alexander Isak puts us in a very comfortable position. It was laid on, of course, by Miggy Almiron, who's enjoyed this game quite a lot, hasn't he, after a bit of criticism recently?
Yeah, so that was a key moment. I mean, yeah, as soon as the restart comes out, Sunderland obviously wanted to try and go out Newcastle, and that was just exactly what Newcastle needed. It would basically put the game to bed by that stage. Newcastle maybe out parts of the second half. After that, it was sort of up and down in terms of exactly what they brought, and I think part of that was to do with Joe Linton going off, as we're going to come on to. But that showed that Newcastle capitalised on the mistakes that Sunderland made. That's what good teams do, and that's what, although Newcastle weren't creating loads of opportunities of their own accord, when Sunderland made mistakes, Newcastle punished them. So the first one, obviously, and then they play out from the back. Almiron up high, nicks it, does really, really well, and then very calmly just lays the little flick on to Isak to finish into the empty net, having taken the goalkeeper out of the game. And Almiron has had a difficult few weeks. I mean, I'd said in November, by that point, I actually thought Almiron was playing very, very well, relative even to when he was scoring a lot of goals. And he's had a difficult few weeks. He's had those big moments, the AC Milan chance where he didn't get his foot on the ball, a few other big opportunities, the Nottingham Forest equaliser where he doesn't square it across the goal. And for Almiron, I think that did him the world of good. He was actually dropped at Liverpool the match before, but Howe brought him back in, and his ability to win the ball high, his ability to press, his willingness to keep making those runs down the right-hand side was crucial. And actually, I just want to show a Christmas present that my brother got me in reference to Miguel Almiron, so that because he knows how I tend to get ribbed about him on here. So here is, obviously people at home can't see what this is, so I will tell people.
This is magical podcast material.
A funny visual. So it's a Miguel Almiron premium quality player. So it's instead of a San Miguel badge, I have that. So that's to remind me that Miguel Almiron is far better than you believe that I believe that he is, because I still think there's a narrative that's been created, which is not entirely fair on me. But no, Almiron was absolutely central to Newcastle's victory on Saturday, no doubt about it.
We talk often a lot about, you know, tempo players for Eddie Howe's team. And I mean, the manager was incredibly complimentary about him after the game, saying he's an incredible person. He's the best, you know, but when he plays like that, he is the tone setter in terms of pace, in terms of pressing, pressing at the right time. And yeah, it was great to see him back in that kind of form.
Yeah, he was everywhere, wasn't he? Another player who was everywhere as well, Joe Linton, Chris. We talked briefly about his injury before. Was it a hamstring or a knee? I wasn't quite sure. Probably the one negative of the day, really, that he was withdrawn immediately after Alexander Isak's goal. But he looked more like a player tested the leg and said, no thanks, I'm gonna come off. He'd personified the dominance, hadn't he, in that first half, and he remains hugely important to the team.
I think it's a thigh injury is the way it was described afterwards, and I think it was in the action of sort of trying to play a crossfield ball almost that's when he first felt it. So
he seemed very angry that he'd been shoved in the back as well. As he was playing that ball, he seemed to be suggesting that maybe he wouldn't have got injured if he hadn't have been shoved in the back, which I thought was quite.
That is interesting. I mean, I didn't see that at the time, and I haven't seen that subsequently. But that is interesting. I mean, I thought he was Newcastle's best player in the first half, just in terms of what he brought. Not only did he obviously provide, I don't think it technically counts as an assist, but not only did he force the mistake for the opening goal, you could see he was just physically better and stronger and able to get up and down the pitch and dominate that midfield. I thought a little bit of that control went off when he went off the game. Maybe that's also because Newcastle were 2-0 up. Mighty came on, I thought he had good moments, but he's not Joe Linton in terms of exactly the same player. He's not that physical presence in midfield and that box-to-box presence, just getting up and down the pitch. And that was the difference Newcastle had, as George mentioned earlier. They were just physically stronger than Sunderland in so many ways, and he really did encapsulate that. So that was the one negative. Eddie Howe referenced it after the match, and there is a concern that I think he's certainly a significant doubt for Man City, and there is a concern that we might not see Joe Linton for a few weeks, if not slightly longer. We wait and see. Newcastle are still going to assess that, but that is a negative at this point. Thankfully, there's a 2-week break to come, and that might mean that he is back sooner rather than later and doesn't miss too many matches, whereas if he'd done this in any time in December, that would have been 3 or 4 games at least he's out for. There isn't that risk at this point, but I do think he's exactly the player you want to be in and around Man City with Kevin De Bruyne back this weekend.
I thought Newcastle had some, you know, exceptional performers mentioned at Almiron. Bruno was another one. I thought he was incredible. As Chris says, Joe Linton absolutely sort of personified dominance, both kind of on and off the ball. Sunderland just didn't have a player like him. And, you know, talk about in the past, you know, not too long ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, if you're playing an FA Cup game as a Premier League team against a Championship side, what can you expect? You can expect big, rugged centre-halves. You can expect big, rugged centre-forwards. And it was like the opposite. It's like Newcastle had the big players. And, you know, I'm not saying that it was like Newcastle kicked Sunderland out of the game, because it wasn't like that, because they're obviously very, very talented players as well, but they just didn't have anybody like Joe Linton. I thought he was absolutely magnificent. So yeah, fingers crossed the injury isn't as bad as it seems, but that was the one. Yeah, I mean, just not being able to catch a break in terms of injuries is the real shame.
Yeah, absolutely. And it didn't really ever massively kick off, did it? But there was a little bit of argy-bargy involving Anthony Gordon, who tortured try Hugh Moore afternoon, basically, and offed him his shirt after the game after he tore a strip off it. Overall, though, Chris, things never really got massively tasty on the pitch, did they?
No, they didn't. I mean, that moment being captured was brilliant, because when you first saw it, and then to see what Gordon had actually said, and yeah, he basically said, I'll just wait until after the match and I'll give you my shirt. That's what you expect from Anthony Gordon. I mean, that's what people thought. I think there was that when Anthony Gordon was joining Newcastle, and there was maybe a bit of disquiet from some people about him coming in. It's because he is one of those players who I think other opposition sides hate, and it's little things like that, not only what he brings on the pitch and the legs that he showed to get beyond Hume all match, but also then those little like tasty moments. He's quite happy to get involved in them. But no, there was no real punch up. Isak runs in afterwards and like shoves out the way, and it was interesting to see he was the first one involved, desperate to get involved in that. But it didn't flare up. It wasn't like some of the matches we've seen historically. There was never really a risk of a red card for anyone. I don't think there were terrible tackles, really. There were a couple of rightly yellow carded players, but no, it wasn't like you would expect a sort of 15-20 years ago. No,
didn't boil over, did it?
No, And I don't think the game sort of allowed it to, because it just wasn't like that. I mean, if the game, if it was still 0-0 or 1-1, then, you know, perhaps when there's that tension, it can sort of boil over. But there wasn't tension in the match, was there? I mean, it was, as far as Newcastle was concerned, it was a game more or less free of that kind of thing. Those little moments tended to be with players and their own team. I mean, so Luke 09 went flying into Lewis Miley and got a big roar from the crowd. But there were those things where Bruno puts the ball out for the corner in his own half and then turns to Newcastle's fans and is pumped up and doing all that again. And, you know, Kieran Trippier pointing to the scoreboard. He'd got a lot of stick throughout the game and when it was 2-0 up.
I massively enjoyed Trippier taking the piss a little bit with the ball at the corner. Did you see that one? Where he put the ball down for the corner and it was so far out of the quadrant that you could have drove a car between the ball and the quadrant. Yeah. And the fans were going wild and he just looked at them and went, nah, yeah, I know, don't worry. And then he put it back. I like that. I enjoyed that. It's good.
It was just
gentle, but it's nice, you know.
Yeah, and it just wasn't the occasion where things threatened to boil over, because, as I say, there was no real tension in the result, was there?
No, not at all. And I think what you said earlier on was interesting about Newcastle really imposed themselves physically. Sunderland didn't really seem to be able to do that, maybe because of the size of their team. They have got a smaller team. They didn't try to impose themselves physically until a bit later on in the game, when maybe it was a little bit far gone. And Ballard again come flying across and smashed in Anthony Gordon as he was through. After, again, as well, Luke 09 had tried to half Alexander Isak on the halfway line as well. Newcastle got in behind and they give away a penalty. A no-look penalty from Alexander Isak, George. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't want to inject a sour note into the podcast.
Take it off him. He doesn't deserve it.
No, it was, you know, he finished it very well. I mean, what a moment for him to score two goals in the derby. And yeah, it comes from another mistake. I mean, that's it. You know, Sunderland made three massive errors at the back.
They did.
And they gave away three goals. And again, that was one of the big differences between the two levels of the two sides. You know, Newcastle know that if you're playing in the Premier League or the Champions League, you make a mistake, that's you done. And, you know, I think you can probably get away with more in the Championship, but they made three terrible errors and were punished for all of it. And I think, you know, Amanda Staveley, one of Newcastle's co-owners, probably summed it up on her Instagram post when the ball goes in and she shouts, "Fucking get in, yes!" And in the end, it turned out to be pretty much, you know, the ideal day for Newcastle on what threatened to be, you know, very difficult for them.
I also just want to give a shout out for Dan Ballard, that he also had one of the best claims for an offside I think I've ever seen. And I saw it in real time at the time, that there was... Isak obviously gets the ball, and as you say, Luke 09 comes to tries to go through him. At first, Anthony Gordon is in offside position, but Anthony Gordon has returned to being in an onside position quite clearly, and he's away. And this just the desperation to stick your hand up and to, can I have an offside call here, and it was just never going to come. So then he from that position, which has probably cost him a yard or two as well, he tries to get back across to Gordon, and clatters into him. But George, did you actually think it was a good penalty? Because obviously it wasn't really a twatter. So were you on board with that as a penalty, or what do you...
Well, it didn't matter at that point, did it, Chris? I think that's the thing. I think there's a context for everything. I mean, you know, you don't do that kind of prancing, stupid run-up and panenkas when it's 0-0 and this is to win a match. I think 2-0 in the 90th minute, whatever it was, it just didn't matter. And so I'm not going to get too worked up about that, in spite of your best efforts to make me.
It was a good try, though, Chris. It was enjoyable, very enjoyable. It's excellent.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, here's a little bit of audio from Dan Byrne in the aftermath of the Derby victory.
Yeah, obviously, I think that we are expected to win. I think anything that was one of those games where it was like there was no good outcome for us, really. Like, obviously, we won 3-0, so we're happy. But as in, like, if we hadn't have won comfortably, people would have been complaining. If we'd have gotten beat, it would have been horrific. So to come away with a sort of 3-0 win, a clean sheet, it's probably as best as it could have been.
So what sort of mindset did you all come in the game with,
man? Just focus. I don't think there's any pressure, not internally anyway. I think there's been sort of talk externally about like that we're not doing great and stuff, but internally I think we've still got belief in what we do, the Gaffer's philosophy and the way that we want to play. So I think it was more just sort of resetting after the Liverpool game. Even the Liverpool game, I thought that was more like us. I know that we conceded a lot of chances, but I thought that we were a lot better compared to what had been weeks previous. So yeah, hopefully this is a sort of kickstart to better half the season.
So George, Dan Byrne there, nice to hear from him. Do you think they can use this to kickstart the rest of the season, as Dan suggested?
Yeah, I mean, that has to be the hope, doesn't it? I mean, he talked about, you know, Newcastle looking much more like Newcastle in this game, and obviously there's the context of who they were playing, but I agree with that. I think you see the benefits of Newcastle having some time on the training pitch, some time to recover a bit, and you know, we have to remember that this was a big game, not just because it was a derby, but because it's an FA Cup match. Newcastle don't win third round FA Cup games, particularly away from home. They've got an absolutely dreadful record. So, I mean, this was like a big moment for the team, I think, not just because of the derby. It draws a line under that awful run of form in the derby, but it also keeps the season alive in a positive sense in terms of a cup competition. That's really important. I think Dan also said that it felt a bit like this was sort of a lose-lose scenario. Now, I think in a derby, I think as a Newcastle fan, you would take any win ahead of kickoff. You would take a scrappy 1-0 and say that's fine. But I think this version of the win is pretty much as good as it could have got for Newcastle. They get through it. They're dominant. They win comfortably in terms of, you know, the margins. They play well. And it has that effect of firstly quietening the noise around the club. I mean, a lot of that noise was external, but again, as Newcastle fans, you know what it's like when results start going the wrong way. There can be a negative momentum, you know, just as there can be a very strong positive momentum when things are going the right way. And we also know what derbies can do. They can make people go mad. You know, they can make, you can kind of have that edge of madness in matches where people take strange decisions and do all sorts of things. There was none of that from Newcastle. They were incredibly controlled, incredibly professional. And it's, yeah, I mean, I would say, and by the way, I would reverse that bit as well. People were saying that this was a no-lose game for Sunderland, you know, that this was a free hit. I think in terms of what happened off the pitch before the match leading up to it, with all the stuff about tickets, all the stuff about the Black Cats bar that Newcastle fans were in, about redecorating all of that, and then how they played on the pitch, there was no such thing as a free hit in a derby. And, you know, that set a terrible tone for them. And it'd be interesting to see how they respond to it. But, yeah, I mean, that has to be the hope. It's gone absolutely as well as it could have done, the derby, from the Newcastle perspective. And, you know, it's been very difficult against Manchester City. We know that. But, yeah, breathing space and respite, relief, chance to reset. I think that's really important.
I'd agree with all that. I mean, in hindsight, me describing this as the most difficult or the worst of Newcastle's draws of the season looks naive, and if I went back, I would try and reanalyze that. But I do think that given the context of the way Newcastle were coming in this match, that was true. And having seen,
you're right, it wasn't required at all, was it?
Yeah. But what I was going to say is that I was going to give a shout out. I'm not going to name any specific names, but some people in the press box had said over the course of the last couple of weeks, some people had seen a lot more of Sunderland than I or others, that Newcastle will win and probably win 3-0 and it'll be relatively comfortable. And that turned out to be the case, but I do think there was still that unknown factor of everything that was going into this match. The fact it was the first derby in 8 years, all of the fact that the teams hadn't played each other, Newcastle's current form, injuries, everything surrounding the situation. Yeah. And really, Sunderland had struggled off the pitch already going into the match. And I think from Thursday onwards, once all the stuff about the Black Cards bar had broken, I think that gave Sunderland, whereas Newcastle had a clarity in what they had to go and do, I think Sunderland didn't necessarily have that sort of unity and focus going into the match. And that probably negatively affected them from the get-go. So yes, I do think it can be something which can give real impetus to Newcastle for the rest of the season. It at least quietens all the noise down around the situation. I think if Newcastle had lost or drawn and had played really poorly, then all of the external questions about Eddie Howe maybe start to eat in a little bit more. But I think all of that is that quietens down for now. They've got Man City this weekend, which obviously is a huge match. But I think regardless of what happens at then and then Villa after the break, I think the fact that he's won against Sunderland means all of that just quietens down significantly.
Yeah, I mean, they were expected to win Newcastle, weren't they? And that was, as George said before, probably about as well as it could have went. We are entitled, though, aren't we, George, to celebrate this one? It's been nearly a decade since we've won a derby. So as a Newcastle fan, you've got to feel a little bit of, you know, you've got to feel a little bit of a spark there. That we're entitled to celebrate this.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And, you know, it was a huge match. I mean, I thought, you know, Eddie Howe was very measured in his comments afterwards when he was asked about the occasion, asked if he enjoyed it. And, you know, he played it down as he plays down pretty much everything, but he also gave the game away a little bit when he was asked about it, and you know, the occasion and managing the occasion, he spoke about it in the same breath as AC Milan and Paris Saint-Germain. He said, having gone through those big games, that helped us with a game like this. And you know, that for me, when I talk about my love of the derby, that's what it is. It's about the magnitude of the occasion. It might only be huge to us. It's not, you know, in terms of, you know, the Richter scale of footballing matches, it's not AC Milan, it's not PSG, but for us it is. And, you know, you see the scale of the police operation, the operation getting 6,000 Newcastle fans to the derby. It is different. It's just different. And I think, you know, Newcastle's record has been appalling. And of course the context of where Newcastle are in the league and where Sunderland are in the league doesn't matter in terms of that. It's a derby. They draw a line and yeah, they have a bit of fun with it. And I think there was, you know, there was that thing at the end where, Jason Tindall calls everyone together in front of the away fans and they do their sort of traditional team picture there instead of in the dressing room. And there was there's a touch of shithousing to that. Let's be honest. But of course, I mean, absolutely. It's what we're about as a region, this derby match. You take the piss, you have a bit of fun, and I think that was absolutely fair enough.
In terms of the Tindall situation, that was my understanding is that was something that they'd thought about beforehand, and obviously that you have to then go and win the match. But I also think that was sort of I think that's both to show sort of strengthen the unity they feel has been so important to Newcastle's success under Eddie Howe, Jason Tindall and the current ownership throughout the time that they've had in the last few months. But also then, as George said, there's that full-on shithousing element to have 6,000 Newcastle fans behind them waving their black and white scarves. That's not something which, given the situation that both clubs are in, never mind Newcastle's recent record in the derby, but also given the situation that both clubs are in and we don't actually know when the next derby will be, that is an image which a lot of Newcastle fans, I'm sure, will cherish. And so I think fair enough in that sense. It was, I can understand why it would rile Sunderland fans, but equally I can see also why Newcastle did it. So
there's probably a point though, isn't there, where you need to draw a line with this kind of thing. And it wasn't really like any derby contest that we've had in recent years. Probably a good idea to have a look at what Phil Buckingham said on The Athletic about the clubs living in different worlds, George. There is a point, isn't there, where Newcastle need to sort of, where we need to understand where we sit now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. And I suppose I said this on social media on Saturday night. One thing that I wanted to sort of draw attention to was that before the match, there was a delegation of representing Newcastle who brought a huge bunch of flowers, a floral tribute, and took it to the media centre, which is now called the Louise Wanless Media Centre, named after someone who was a really good friend of mine at Sunderland. And those flowers were then left outside the Stadium of Light. That's a symbol of the esteem with which she was held, Louise was held, both at Sunderland, but also far wider than that. And I just thought that was a lovely little touch. Lee Marshall, who fills a similar position at Newcastle, worked with Louise. And, you know, I think the derby can bring out good things. And, you know, it's important to remember that as much as we might not like to admit it, there's far more that unites the Northeast than there is that divides the Northeast. It's just that football is a massive, massive one. And again, this will probably be meaningless to a lot of people listening. And I'm sure the people concerned won't listen, but I've not been to the Stadium Light for a long time, and seeing the same faces in the press room, Andy, Kevin, Caroline, people who I love and people who were Sunderland through and through, but just great, great people. It was an absolute delight to see them again. And, you know, football is capable of doing good stuff as well, and it's important to remember that.
Absolutely. So the next derby then, Chris, another 5 or 6 years, do you think? Or do we want one ASAP? Dan Burn seemed to be suggesting that he wants Newcastle and Sunderland and Borough all fighting in the same league as well.
I think Sean Longstaff and Kieran Trippier said the same thing, and I would like to see that. I mean, not in terms of, as I say, I actually hate the days themselves, but I would like to see both clubs back in the Premier League, and so that these occasions are back. That there was a uniqueness around this one, given the different divisions and given the length of time between them playing. But I think it would be better to have Sunderland and Middlesbrough back in the Premier League and have the North East represented in that way. That's what I would say. George is going to come in and then he's going to be even more positive about it. You know, oh, it's wonderful these days. They're wonderful. Yeah.
But no, you took the piss out of me, Taylor, for saying, you know, on the morning of the derby, doing a kind of vomity sort of word on Twitter. But that is the beauty of the match, and it's a weird thing. The last time I'd sort of felt that, looking back, was actually around the Southampton semi-final in the League Cup. Now, that was that very, very bizarre feeling of Newcastle competing for something positive in the second half of the season, and there's something being something at stake, and there was something tangible at stake with that. It was to get to a cup final. But the derby, it's this intangibility of meaning. And it's a big fixture for us. It's probably not a big fixture anywhere else in the world, but it's unique. And my problem with the derby has always been that it's been this race to the bottom, and it's taken on too much significance, in a negative way. But I just think that in the kind of beautiful panoply of fixtures, to have that one day where everything goes out the window and it just exists for its own sake. Yeah, I hope it's not as long until the next one. I hope Sunderland can come up, and obviously I would want Newcastle to win, but it's the jeopardy of the day that just makes it so remarkable.
Yeah, I think my negativity towards the whole thing's probably a product of the last so many years of being beaten down by it all, you know. And it was a fabulous occasion, and it was great to see the teams playing each other again. But I still didn't enjoy the couple of days beforehand, the feelings in the chest, the stomach doing somersaults and all that, you know. But yeah, it was. I mean, it was a great result on the day and a fantastic occasion. So, Chris, it's the last chance of silverware, isn't it, for Newcastle United as well? The draw happens after this show goes out. And bearing in mind, we have absolutely no kind of say over this, but who would you want in the draw? Who would you like to see Newcastle get?
Well, Newcastle are ball number 15, but that's completely irrelevant.
It is.
I mean, Newcastle are probably going to get Liverpool away, aren't they? I would very much imagine.
Yeah, Man City away.
That's what I would suspect. I mean, what I've just seen is, if you look at NUFC.com's report from the match, that was actually the first time Newcastle have won a third round away tie in the FA Cup at the first attempt since 2005.
Wow.
So they've had 12 away draws but since 2005, since they actually were. So that was at Yedding, I think, when they did it then.
Jesus.
So that shows actually that in the context of Newcastle United and recent FA Cup history, Eddie Howe had lost both of his previous FA Cup matches against Cambridge and Sheffield Wednesday, both in League One at the time. That was a huge victory. So I suspect it'll be a very difficult draw, but it would be nice if Newcastle had a home draw against lower league opposition.
I just wanted to add to that the thing that I kind of wrote from the game on Saturday evening, which you can find on The Athletic, that was all about that. It was, you know, there was a double whammy. It wasn't just Newcastle winning a derby that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It was winning in the FA Cup, which doesn't happen. And when we now say last chance of silverware, we're not following that with a laugh, which we would have done 3 years ago. You know, it was a big game in its own right. And it's, you know, it's about time that Newcastle and FA Cup third round day was not synonymous with flatness, with embarrassment, with going out early. It's a big competition now for Newcastle. Let's see how far they can go. On that same sort of theme, Phil Buckingham has written to you about what the result means to Sunderland. That might be interesting for Newcastle fans to have a read of that. And then by the time this comes out, Michael Walker will have written, who is you know, an exceptional writer, has written sort of a bigger, wider-ranging piece about the Derby and the meaning of the Derby. So I would direct people to have a read of that.
Lovely stuff, yes. If you get yourself over to theathletic.com/Newcastle Pod, you can pay just $1.99 a month for your first 12 months with The Athletic. We'll be back in just a second.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Right then, if there were any doubts that Becky Langley's Newcastle United women's team would pick up where they left off last year, then they were thoroughly dispelled by a ruthless dismantling of Halifax at Kingston Park. 7-0, a hat-trick for Katie Barker and Tyler Dodds. Really enjoyed getting her first goal for the team, George. A lovely result, that.
It was brilliant. It was an absolutely brilliant day. And yeah, I spoke to Becky Langley afterwards, and so have a bit of a listen.
Really, really good performance from the team. I think one of the words the girls used was an efficient performance. So, got the job done, kept a clean sheet, and really exciting forward play. I thought Katie Barker in particular was brilliant in the first half. But yeah, fantastic result and a great way to start the new year.
One of the things that sort of struck me watching the team, not being here for a while, but how much fitter the team look, how much more confident the team look, playing beautiful stuff. Are you really sort of noticing the difference from doing the full-time training and all that?
Yeah, definitely. I think the team being full-time, they've got more access to the gym, the more access to the football sessions we're putting on, so they're able to get so much fitter, stronger, faster. But yeah, the confidence comes from the amount of game time we've had now, being top of the league and performing well. I think confidence comes, and I think next week's game against Manchester United is a win-win for us. You know, we get something out of the game, we win the game, you know, confidence will be even higher. We obviously were playing to win, but if we don't get the result we want, then it's a learning curve and we can see how far off we are.
I'm sure that for a game like this, you'd be looking to see how your team plays, to see if there is half an eye on that match, but just not at all. I mean, that was focused, it was clinical, it's professional.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the girls know the leagues were the most important thing to us, so they'll be taking it just one game at a time and not getting too carried away with thinking about Manchester United next week. But at the same time, you know, the players will be thinking, look, I want to perform to showcase what I can do to make sure I'm in that starting 11 versus Man United. So, yeah, hopefully they play a strong team. We want to play against the best players we can, but we are really looking forward to it.
Yeah, is it a case of being able to showcase Newcastle United and what's going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a thousand fans from Newcastle who bought a ticket for that game, so we want to go and showcase the best version of ourselves. We want to be competitive, we want to get after Man United, we want to make it hard for them, and you know, we're the underdogs, which will be new for us, and yeah, we're just excited to play and show what we can do against the best players in the country.
And as you said to Becky, George, since you last watched the lasses in person, they've really transformed themselves, haven't they? Physically, they seem to be in a lot better shape.
So physically, but you know, in terms of confidence, obviously having been unbeaten in the entirety of 2023, which is absolutely astonishing. But in the way they played, in every single respect, they looked better. Now, I mean, obviously last season they were dominant in their division and they're top of the league this time too. But there was something quite remarkable in the transformation. I think, as Becky said, you know, going full time means that their fitness has gone up to another level. That puts them in an unusual position in their team, but just the way they played, they've always been good, but it was, everybody knew what they were supposed to be doing. You can see the speed of thought, not just the speed of the way they play. It was just so impressive. They looked absolutely brilliant. And yeah, if Sunderland versus Newcastle was boys against men, then Newcastle against Halifax was women against girls. I mean, there was just an absolute disparity. And it was brilliant to see another good crowd there, really upbeat. Amanda Staveley was there again, showing her support. Things are just going from strength to strength. I think they are 5 points clear of Burnley at the top now, albeit have played a game more, but I couldn't speak more highly of what I saw. It was just brilliant. And, you know, they've got a lot of going for them. We have to sort of accept that and admit that. You know, they've got all the stuff off the pitch, the, you know, recording games on video, and they're using all technology and things like that. But, yeah, they're really leading from the front. So just brilliant to see.
And all of this, Chris, should really put them in a great place, shouldn't it, going into that FA Cup game at Man United? An absolutely huge game, that.
It is a huge game, and obviously we'll then see how Newcastle can perform against a side still several levels above them. It's aspirational, this match, I think, for them. That's the level they want to get to. They want to be regularly
competing. It's a good
competing.
Tester, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. And they will go in as massive underdogs, and rightly so, but it will be intriguing to see how they do tackle that and how they are going to perform there, because this is the chance for them to step up and just being in the FA Cup as well. We talk about Newcastle men's side being in the FA Cup. For the women's team, eventually the goal is to also win trophies in those competitions, so to start to get along that and start to get the taste for it. A lot of these players won't have been in an occasion like this before. They won't have played against the level of opposition they're going to face. Some of them have have come down from those sorts of levels, but others, they are trying to grow with Newcastle women's side. And so yeah, I think a huge match on Sunday, and one very much looking forward to.
Absolutely. Right then, back in just a moment.
Come on, you Maggies.
So, lads, for the first time in forever, no midweek fixture. Have you chaps got anything interesting planned, George?
Just work. Really, it doesn't quieten down. No, got a couple of kind of big, fun, interesting things potentially happening in the next couple of weeks, which obviously I will keep you informed with. But it's just the pleasing thing is to repeat a little bit, is just that the sting has now gone out of the conversation around Newcastle, and you know that is the negativity of a derby match, is that there can be a lot of fallout, and at least there isn't that anymore, and we can get on. And you know, I think Newcastle will have a strong second half to the season. I think the fixture list will help them in that respect. Whether that starts this weekend or not, I don't know, but I think people will be feeling a lot more positive about it than a few days ago.
Yeah, Man City on Saturday, Chris. Tea time kickoff. That's a pretty much as tough a task as you can ask for, isn't it?
Yeah, but Newcastle go in with, I wouldn't say huge confidence, because they're still, their league form is still not great, and in general that they obviously last time out at St James's Park in the Premier League lost to Nottingham Forest, and that air of invincibility they almost had at St James's has gone. But the boost of the derby victory and just the focus on that, and having had a full week on the training ground, well, even before Sunderland, I mean, Dan Burns spoke about how Newcastle were a lot more organised because they'd had a few days on the training ground, but they'd played Monday night and then it was back, they were playing on Saturday early afternoon. They've played Saturday early afternoon, they're not playing until Saturday afternoon next week. They're going to have more time on the training ground this week. They're going to be able to be prepared for that. And Newcastle have already beaten Man City at St James's Park this season, albeit in the League Cup. They also drew with them in that wonderful match towards the start of last season, 3s each. So they have positive recent memories against Manchester City, and I think this is going to be a very, very special occasion. I'm really looking forward to it, as difficult a challenge as this will be.
And as if they didn't have enough talent in their squad already, George, Man City, you've got Kevin De Bruyne back this week as well. He came back from injury and played in the FA Cup at the weekend. A bit of a flip reversal of the on-pitch dynamics from the derby, isn't it?
There was that great quote, wasn't there, from a couple of weeks back. Jurgen Klopp sort of said, Kevin De Bruyne back and the Premier League is quaking or shaking or something like that, which I thought was very nice. And yeah, but you know, you want to test yourself against this level of opposition, if nothing else this season. And obviously we don't know how it will play out, we don't know how it will finish, but Newcastle have had a season of moments, haven't they, of big moments, whether it's going to Old Trafford in the League Cup or Man City in the League Cup, obviously Sunderland just this last weekend, and then all of those Champions League fixtures. there have been some kind of great occasions, and it wouldn't be right to say that Newcastle have come out on top of all of them, but they have in a few. And, you know, you can talk about the Arsenal game as well, and obviously the Chelsea in the Premier League at home. So I don't think there's anything to be scared of, certainly not after what's happened in the last few days. So, and yeah, if Newcastle are able to kind of recover some of that physical, I mean, it's not just about how Newcastle play from the start. You saw again against Sunderland, you know, they named a very strong first team, the strongest possible first team they could name, but there was very, very few options on the bench. It's about in-game physicality, and do you have a go for 60 minutes? Do you have to conserve your energy because you know you're going to play for 90 minutes? It's a slightly different thing, but when they're fully fit, when they're at it, Newcastle are absolutely a match for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, what you've got to remember is that if you take a step back and look at this from a wider context, the victory over Sunderland was massive in many ways, but really the problems or issues Newcastle had before haven't changed. And I'm going to look at that in a piece which should be up in the next day or so on The Athletic, sort of really looking mainly around transfers and the Joe Linton situation and FFP, which really is affecting what Newcastle can do. And there was huge relief at the weekend, but Newcastle do need reinforcements this month. They do need to strengthen. They do need to see some movement in the transfer market. Now that there's going to be a transfer meeting this week. Newcastle have already convened some, but there's going to be another one this week to look at where Newcastle can go next. How can they actually get the wheels in motion? How can they get players in? And I think it's likely to be after Man City. That 2 week break is going to be huge off the field, both in terms of Newcastle training and getting more bodies back where the injury situation lies, but also what business can they actually do? How can they make sure they end the month stronger than they started it? And right now that remains unclear, but hopefully by the end of this week there'll be a little bit more clarity on that front.
Fingers crossed. Just a quick news flash, lads. How about this? For the first time ever in Pod on the Tyne history, some news has broken while we're on air. They haven't waited until we finished the show. Fabian Schär signed a contract extension, Chris.
Yes, so Fabian Schär's contract was due to expire this summer. He's been almost ever present at Newcastle since Eddie Howe arrived. He was restored to the side after really falling out of favour under Steve Bruce, and it looked like he was going to set to leave really before Eddie Howe came in, but now he's an integral part of Newcastle's defence, has been almost ever present this season when other members of the back four have been out injured, and he continues to play a huge role. I think that Newcastle have looked at trying to add greater depth at centre-back, but it's a position they've struggled to strengthen, and they want to hold on to Fabian Schär to make sure that he is here beyond this season. So his contract now is up till the end of next season, summer of 2025, and that's a significant boost, I think, for Newcastle during a month where they're struggling to bring other players in. But if you know that Fabian Schär is going to be here for another year, that is a real boost for everyone.
Yes, another year of Schär, George. We're going to get to see his glorious Swiss bracket for another year. That's what you want to see, isn't it?
Absolutely. He's been brilliant. I mean, he has to be up there in the conversation about players of the season. I mean, incredible to think that, you know, he's gone from where he was in the pecking order to being a regular in the Champions League. And he's been absolutely fantastic. Nobody can do what he does on the ball. I mean, that's one thing to say apart from as a defender. And he's been excellent. It's totally and utterly deserved. And yeah, well done to him.
Absolutely. Yeah, just before we finish off, we've got to say as well that Yakuba Minter has been named in the final 27-man squad for Gambia at the African Cup of Nations. And if any supporters thought he'd be playing for Newcastle in the second half of the season, that'll put an end to those rumours. But good luck to him. We hope to see him get plenty of tournament minutes, as the kids are saying these days. And those games will be shown live on Sky in the UK if you want to check him out as well. That's just about it. Thank you very much, chaps. Thanks for your time, Chris.
You're very, very welcome. I feel really re-energised now. I know I haven't sounded it throughout the podcast. I've sounded very, very, very mellow. Just the come down of having spent a full Saturday with George Culkin was difficult. I mean, that was even longer than we would usually spend on match day. That was a very, very long...
Take it out of anybody, yeah, wouldn't it?
Just him and him also just kept going on, oh yeah, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. I'm trying to focus on my work. I'm trying to focus on the day. I don't need you in my ear. So yeah.
Hapless Chris Wolf, who left his fleece in the in the Sunderland press box. So it came back significantly lighter.
Hapless George Culkin, who then left his cap at the end of my drive, so I have his cap in my possession right now.
Right, I'm going to stop this now because I feel like we could go back and forth between you two being hapless for the rest of the day. So let's stop.
It's like our inter pod derby, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's like the Abbott and Costello derby used to. So it's like watching bloody
Russ Abbott and Elvis Costello.
Russ Abbott and Elvis Costello. Excellent. Right. Okay. That's it. Get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X or whatever you're calling it at the minute, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Newcastle have finally won a derby for the first time in a long time. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, thank you for listening. Take care. Enjoy your week. Goodbye. Fabian Scher signed a contract extension, Chris. Chris is on mute.
He just looked so earnest there. That was brilliant. Talking away.
You nugget.
Right. So am I just replying to you there?
Yes.
That's the way it works.
That's
yeah.
how this tends to happen.
That's how conversations work.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.